Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together once a week, live here at noon on Tuesdays at KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. This is Community Radio. We get by with your support. Thanks for listening, and thanks for becoming members, all who have. And those that haven't, please consider that you might, because...
Yes, join us.
This is a fun thing to do. Yes. So, Donalana Kitchen talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, opinions.
Food politics, food policy.
Yeah. Anything that you can talk about around a kitchen table, and here we are.
Like my mother used to say, though, you can't talk about sex, politics, or religion, okay?
But what else is there?
Well, but those are not the things that are discussed.
Oh, all right. All right, we'll talk about something
on our radio
real nice.
Show.
Well, we've got great things today. Last weekend, we celebrated Mother's Day, and I have a little segue here into a Mother's Day remembrance sort of thing. On my farm, this is the season of weeds, and we really should get after those weeds. All the dandelions are coming up on the hedgerows and the thistles and everything. And I went to pull down the weed whacker, but I must say that the weeds are going to keep growing on Onion Creek Farm, because as I reached up to see the wood, to pick out the weed whacker, there was a cardinal nest built into the weed whacker.
And
speaking of cardinal, a good cardinal mother was on it. So we'll just give
we
it.
We love our cardinals.
We'll just give it another couple weeks, and we'll just let the weed. Yeah, there they are. That's good. And Donna, did you find any more information about the upcoming lard contest?
Not much more than that. It's happening. It's not the lard contest. Baking contest. So you got to actually bake with the lard. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, frying up some chorizos or, you know, using lard for those kinds of things. It's baking.
Good.
And you know I love to bake with lard. So it will be next Saturday morning at the Ames Farmers Market. And it was kind of sponsored by, I think it's called Lucky George Farm, and they have those black hogs. So be there or be square. I'm going to show up for that one, and we'll have a report about what happened.
Very good. On the Donalana Kitchen, we talk about food and farming, but we also usually talk about what we put in our bodies. We're interested in nutrition, but today, we're going to consider the outside of our bodies, how we take care of our bodies, how we clean ourselves, how we clothe ourselves. We have a special guest in the studio today, Jenny Welder. She's a microbiologist by day and a crazy fiber soap lady by night. She works for the USDA here in Ames. And with her husband, Jeff, she has a company called Herbal Bliss Soaps. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, Jenny.
And you didn't mention, but they are at the farmers markets, right?
Yes.
Every
Thank
Saturday
you so
at the
much
Ames
for having me.
Downtown
yep.
Farmers Market.
Very good. So, Jenny, how did you get started with soap? I love your soap. I love things that smell. So how did you get started?
Well, I was making salves and massage oils and things, and part of a medieval recreation group that we belonged to at the time, the Society for Creative Anachronism. And one of my mentors told me, well, you should learn how to make soap. And so trial and error through a couple of very bad, horrible batches and whatnot, I taught myself how to make soap. And so I was selling my soap at these SCA events, which was
That was the California part of your life.
This was while I was going to college here at Iowa State.
Oh, okay.
So I was doing this in my little college student apartment, going down to Wheatsfield, back when Wheatsfield was across the street here in the little tiny shop that it was, buying my herbs and my essential oils. And, you know, it was a great way to make a few bucks around the holidays for a college student, especially as I went into grad school. And it just kind of took off from there. And then when we moved out to Albany, New York, to do my postdoc after I finished my PhD.
You're a microbiologist, right?
Correct.
Okay.
my husband had a hard time finding a job. And he's like, well, what if you taught me how to make soap? Because we made a lot of friends in the farmers market community there in Albany. And so he started making soap and we started the business. And that's been about 8 years ago now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I was hoping maybe you were talking about a PhD in soap making or something. I thought,
no,
what
no.
a great idea.
You know, it was always kind of, you know, I came to college many, many years ago now, you know, the animals, studying animal science, and it was a toss-up.
She's not really that old, let me just tell you.
I'm older than I look. But, you know, and it was a toss-up whether or not I was coming to college for horticulture or animal science, and actually the microbes won in the end. And it was always kind of my dream that someday my immunology and my microbiology and the herbs and the natural healing would all come together. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case yet, but I'm not going to give up.
Oh, well, very good. Well, soap is a good start.
It's a very good start.
Yeah, it's kind of – it's not really – it doesn't make sense that something that's kind of, I don't know, kind of fatty base sort of – how
– to me, it's just this fascinating chemical process
How do you make soap?
How do you make soap? Well, it starts with lye. And it used to be you could buy red devil lye at the grocery store, and then suddenly they decided that was dangerous and took it off the market.
Where are you getting lye? From wood ashes? How do you make it from wood ashes?
I have done it once.
I have lots of wood ashes.
Right. And that takes lots and lots of wood ashes and way more patience than I have. You can still buy sodium hydroxide over the internet. We actually, you know, have to have a hazardous shipment permit now to get it in the quantities that we use it. But
sodium hydroxide. Okay.
Yes.
So it's sodium with...
Yeah, sodium with a very strong base. Mm-hmm. Attached to it.
Okay.
So if you remember,
base as in base pH.
Base pH.
Okay.
Yep. This stuff has a pH well over 12.
Oh my!
It's drain cleaner. It will.
Oh.
I mean, it's a good way to dissolve bodies, but you didn't hear that from me.
Since our sweet, lovely soap seller here,
little helpful information.
Yeah. So you take your water. Or milk, or herbal tea, or in some cases, even beer, and mix it with the sodium hydroxide, the strong base, to create a liquid.
But not very much, I would guess.
No, it's about one-third of the total reaction mixture.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A little bit
more than you'd think.
Okay.
And then you start adding your melted fats, and those fats could be vegetable oils and we use a lot of olive oil, some coconut oil. Each of the different fats are going to have different properties. And so it's fascinating to me, all these different properties of these fats and what they bring to the soap. These fats could also be of animal sources, lard and tallow.
Our good lard,
yep.
And beef fat, too, right?
Yes.
Tallow is used a lot.
Yeah, and it's not what people would normally think of as tallow. So this is where the geeky. You guys opened up the geeky scientist. I mean, sorry about
this. Go for it.
So when we think of beef fat, we think of the little, you know, bits and trimmings that come with, you know, that fat cap on the top of a steak. Mm-hmm. You know, this makes horrible soap.
Oh.
That's not what you want to render down for tallow. What you actually want is the fat that comes from, that's surrounding the internal organs. It's called pelvic and kidney fat. And it actually is a measure of how healthy the animal is, how much kidney and pelvic fat that they have. But this internal organ fat, it's got just a little bit different of a chemical structure than that. And
would that be the equivalent of the leaf lard, which
yes,
is more delicate
exactly.
for baking?
So your leaf lard, your high-quality lard, your high-quality tallow and stuff that's coming out of these internal this internal organ fat.
So
it's a different place than where you're getting it trimmed off of the
carcass. When you butcher the cow, you would save that for the soap, and then would you use the other fats for, like, candle making or...
No, actually, well, through the same medieval group, we had a guy that took all the various different types of fat from the cow and made candles with them. And he was, like, really surprised that some made from the fat trimmings off of the meat were horrible candles.
Huh.
And actually, the best candles were the same ones that you would make that... the soap and everything else, that high-quality tallow from the internal organs.
Oh, so that part was in high demand.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to remember, So we're going back in history where people in certain geographies did not have access to olive oil, coconut oil, and most of their animal fats, this would be Iowa, were their only fats in their diet.
Right.
So well, and that fat was not wasted.
That fat was absolutely not wasted. And so really when you think about human activity, and that's why, you know, early to rise, early to bed. Well, sun up, you got up and worked. Sun down, you went to bed. And your light was actually primarily firelight.
Firelight. Yeah. Yes,
firelight.
Yes.
And the rushes and the reeds. And so, you know, if you couldn't do it by firelight, there wasn't a lot of candles.
Yeah.
There were candles. They were a pretty precious thing.
Yeah.
Not to be wasted.
Oh,
yeah.
My. Oh, my. And it seems like, well, also we hear in history, and you're probably from the Society for Creative Anachronism, great bunch of people.
I like this organization.
Oh, it's great. They're so much fun.
This could be a whole other show.
They have dragons and things. Oh, you know.
No, dragons. It's all about, you know, it's all historical. It's history by learning, yeah.
I think you're
understanding
dragons
history
are historical
learning.
Myself.
Anyway. I know. Yeah. We draw them.
Okay, that's a Lana tangent. There we go. Dragonflies, maybe. How's that?
All right.
Okay.
That's very good. People didn't always bathe as much as we do now.
No.
And so now we forget that soap, being clean, is a luxury.
Sure. Yes.
Our sense of smell has probably got a whole different idea of what it smells like to be a human being.
Since they weren't bathing, they probably used herbs for other things, like covering bad smells,
driving away bugs. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, everyone knows about, you know, with the popularization of a certain marketing of essential oils, a lot of people know about thieves vinegar.
Oh,
or thieves oil, I should say. Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
Thieves
What's
oil.
Thieves oil.
Oh,
good.
I'm not sure what the current rendition of thieves oil is. They're in most early American cookbooks, and even cookbooks going back earlier, there is a rendition of thieves vinegar.
Oh.
And thieves vinegar is good for cleaning of sick rooms, airing of houses, you know, general cleaning and scrubbing.
Because there's some kind of antimicrobial herb
yes.
in it?
Yes. The story of thieves vinegar is there was a group of thieves during the Black Plague that were able to douse themselves with this and keep them from getting the plague, and they'd go into houses and steal. Well, they finally got caught, and the church said, okay, we'll let you go if you tell us how you did this.
Oh!
And so when you look at the list of herbs, there is rosemary, mm-hmm. lavender, sage, wormwood, mm-hmm. which are all of very antimicrobial.
Oh.
And wormwood is actually very insect repelling. So mm-hmm. the Artemisia family of plants. And actually so in grad school, you know, you do all kinds of crazy things when your professors aren't looking. And we were working with an attenuated strain of Black Plague. And we said,
woohoo!
It
sounds like good fun, huh?
Because it was always, you know, I made a set of thieves vinegar, and the discussion at the SCA events was, well, did it work in actually repelling the fleas, or did it work in killing the bacteria? And, you know, it was like, well, we don't know. We have no way of testing this. Well, working with the attenuated plant strain, we said, hey, we got a way of testing this. Mm-hmm. And so we swabbed some plates with this and then sprayed it with the vinegar, and, well, the bacteria didn't grow. So it could have worked killing the bacteria.
Hot dang.
Could have been both as
it
well.
It could have been both, yes. I mean, we were going to catch my neighbor's flea-ridden cat and douse the cat with the – but, you know, we never got around that far.
Oh, but see, humanity has lasted this long because we've known how to use things in our environment, like herbs.
I want you to make a new product in your product line. I want the thieves vinegar.
Yeah, I usually have it. Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
I didn't see it on the website.
Oh, unfortunately, the website restricts us with how many things we can have. Come by our table at First Market.
Okay.
I have got it. Yeah, thieves vinegar for cleaning.
I have a cat I'd like to douse with
it. So you make these soaps, and why does soap congeal? Is it just all that fat that congeals
all right,
again?
So you've got the
So you've got the lye, and you're dissolved in your water, and you're putting your fats into it, and then you mix it, mix it, mix it. You're bringing all of those chemicals into contact with each other.
You just put it in a big vat and
stir it.
No heat, just...
No, it's going to heat up on its own. It's a really strong chemical reaction that's
going
on there.
Because of the lye.
Yes. And at some point, it's going to go from this liquid into something that resembles cooked pudding. And at that point, you put it into your molds really quick and then put it in an insulated box and forget about it.
Well, where does the water content go?
It's incorporated into that. So that's why homemade soaps are so good for you, is because there's a little bit of water in there. And that water gets actually used in part of that reaction and broken down into part of the OH group that gets put onto the fatty acids.
Oh, it's that mixed.
It gets mixed back in there. Huh. And so you take that fat, and so if you think of a fat, it's a glycerol molecule with three fatty acid chains on it. And the lye breaks that up, and so you've got a glycerol molecule and three hydrogenated fatty acids on it.
Somehow in this description, it's very interesting, but when you're describing all this, I'm thinking of cheese making. Completely not.
Yes.
No. Yes. Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, cheese making, you're taking, you're congealing something, and then you're squeezing
right,
all the
and
water
it's not really a chemical.
I think of cheese making more as origami. It's protein folding. You're taking all the proteins in the milk and you're causing them to fold
but
up.
But you're not really
different. And then
you're not breaking chemical bonds. And
no.
Yeah, so different
soap, you're making chemical bonds, breaking chemical bonds, making new ones, and forming a completely different product.
There you are, Miss Scientist.
Yes, and it's good.
See?
It's good that you are here. So how does a bar of soap get us clean? Why should rubbing that on our hands?
Tell us what a surfactant is.
So a surfactant is something that's going to bind with other molecules. And so chemistry, we have this saying, like dissolves like. So if you think about alcohol, and you know, there's some things that if you take and you put something in water, it just congeals up. Fats and oils.
You guys are
cooking. So fats and oils, and so they just don't want to mix. But if you put a little bit of honey or mustard in there, you can get those fats and oils to now mix.
Right.
And so emulsify. Well, surfactant is kind of the opposite of that. And it's going to take and pull all those other molecules together. So in soap, that glycerol is acting as a surfactant, and it's going to pull the molecules that have that same charge in and make them stick together. And so by making soap, we've taken those fats, changed their chemical charge on them just a little bit, and now it's going to stick with the oils on your skin, the dirt, which has a similar charge, all those other things on your skin. And so like dissolve, that's why you get soap scum. What it is the soap bound with the dirt, the dead skin, all the oils, everything on the surface of your body, and now it's stuck to the side of your tub, the inside of your drain,
Well, at least
everywhere
it's off
but
your body.
But it's not on your body anymore. Yes.
Well, it has to go somewhere. That's how soap works. Wow. Okay.
So cursing soap scum, you should be happy that it's,
yeah,
it's
there it is. There
so
it
the
is.
The trick when you're washing place. Your hands and face with the soap is to rinse really well so all the soap scum goes off
and away. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there's two parts to washing. One is the scrubbing,
the
lather up, and the other part is the rinsing. And the rinsing.
Because you want to get off all of the stuff that's being carried away.
Well, I have to say, in my food safety training, in the sanitary classes, they often point out that in hand washing, which is a big deal in kitchens,
very much so.
The lather up part is actually, they say that the most bacteria is removed from the skin and the hands by the rubbing of the lathering part, and you're supposed to lather and rub quite a long time, longer than you're supposed to count.
You're supposed to sing row, row, row your boat.
Yeah.
That's what we teach little kids when we teach. We do a lot of outreach and demonstration at the USDA, and we teach a hand washing to little kids. We've got glow germs. It's a little oh, glow-in-the-dark bacteria. Yes, and we teach them. We put it on their hands, and then we teach them how to wash their hands and then go back and look. And, yeah, it's you're supposed to scrub while you sing the alphabet or row, row, row your boat.
That's a long time, more than most of us usually do.
It is. It is. But there we go. Get rid of all that stuff. And now the soap is a congealed block, but soap also exists as, well, or as bubble baths, shampoo, cleaners,
so that's
runnier.
Yes, right. And so there is other things that you can take to the soap. You can break it back down and add other things to it to keep it in a liquid form.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, people have often asked us, well, why don't you make a liquid soap? And it's like, because you wouldn't want the things that I have to add to it to make it into a liquid form.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Because you have
the healthiest, cleanest, purest soap is actually in a solid bar.
Can you use that for a shampoo bar?
Yes. And we do. We make a shampoo bar.
So what keeps that from, like, I've used, in my youth, when I was traveling all over the world, I would carry one bottle of Dr. Bronner's liquid soap with me. Because you can actually, it doesn't taste good, but you can brush your teeth with it. You can, and we would, on occasion, have to wash our hair with it. Now, it does leave your hair a little... it's not fluffy, let's say.
No.
Okay.
No.
So in your hair washing bar, what do you put?
So remember I was talking about, you know, you can use different types of oils to make soap. Our shampoo bar has a few different types of oils in it. They're designed to be a little bit cleaner rinsing. Where these have lots of moisturizers to stick to your skin, our soap, our shampoo bar, sorry, doesn't have those in it.
What? So what kind of oils do you use in the shampoo bar?
That uses a lot of castor oil in it. We use just enough coconut, and we actually use a little bit more coconut in it because coconut can be kind of drying. Now, coconut is very moisturizing when you use it in its pure form, but once it becomes saponified, it's actually kind of drying.
Once it becomes saponified?
Very good.
I know. Did you see what words, saponified means?
So saponified is when it undergoes that chemical reaction and gets broken down.
Is that what the word soap comes from?
Yes, exactly.
I love words. Mm-hmm, isn't that nice? There's a bigger word than soap. Very good. Very good. We are in the kitchen with Jenny Welder talking about soap and how it all works. You're listening to KHOI FM 89.1. This is Donna Lana Kitchen, and this is Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are in the studio. We are around our kitchen table today with Jenny Welder talking about soap.
I have a question. Remember, and I don't know, do mothers still do this? If the child says something bad, you get your mouth washed out with soap.
Oh,
now, I only ever had that happen once. My mother wasn't too big on it. It's nasty.
You must be a quick learner. That's
Why does it taste so bad?
It's the alkalinity in the soap. And so
it's really, it's harmless, but it is yucky.
Oh, yes. It tastes horribly bitter to us. And it's that alkaline thing. And natural soaps, and that's actually how we kind of, your tongue is your own natural pH paper.
Oh.
And so something tastes very sharp, like lemon juice, and it's probably very, very acidic. If something So in our soap, if it's too alkaline, and something that's much higher pH than you really want to be using on your skin, if you put your tongue to it, it tastes like putting your tongue on a battery. Kinda, you know, so gives you a little bit of a zip.
Do you self-test?
When I was first learning how to make soap, that was a good way for me to kind of test it. Now that we've got our process down, if we're trying to rush a batch for somebody, we'll, you know, we might do that because it's got a curing time for that chemical reaction. Mm-hmm. It continues on even after it gets solidified. So that way we know it's safe to use.
Oh, I know a lot of your soaps have got like things like goat's milk in it. What's the advantage of putting milk in a soap?
So milk, personally, I think it's just all a matter of preference. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. Some people swear that, you know, the properties of milk make it better for your skin. And there is, you know, certain alpha acids and, you know, other skin softening agents.
There is a long history of luxurious milk baths.
Yes. Ah. And so that's, you know, that. And, you know, at one point I wanted to make goat's milk soap because I had an excess of goat's milk that needed to get used.
You had an excess of goat's milk?
Yes.
I'm giving you my phone number.
Not so much anymore, no.
Okay. But. Oh, very good. But one thing that does, it gives you inspiration for wonderful names for your soap. Because I always go with the ones that have got, goats on it. Yeah.
Yes. Some of our soaps are Simon and Goatfunkel. Parsley, sage, and rosemary-scented soap, groovy goat, patchouli, and purple swirls goat soap.
Oh, and you have a French chèvre now?
Yes, Chef de Provence.
And there's a little picture on the of a goat with a beret on. A little bit of a cliche, but it'll work.
My husband has a lot of fun with the pictures and the labels.
The labels are charming. And it's packaged, wrapped in a little paper. With a cute little label on it, and then each one is tied with string. They would make, I'm sure, lovely gifty items, too, right?
Yes. Well, I'm a very visual person, and so we started with a colored string, so that way I didn't have to sort through it and look at the labels, and I could tell which one was which. And the strings are bits and pieces of, you know, you go to a garage sale, and somebody's got that bag that grandma crocheted or something, mm-hmm. and so we buy those bags of yarn and crochet thread and all those bits, and I use my spinning wheel to combine them to make the strings.
Oh my goodness!
Soap.
So these are hand spun
and
strings.
And
oh my goodness!
Yes,
oh, Jenny, that's really impressive.
Oh, that's lovely.
Huh. Oh boy. Now I wanted to get a little one thing for our listeners. I wanted to talk about the environmental working group. We're talking about Jenny's products, which are very clean, no additives,
yes,
healthy. But not all soaps are like that.
No.
As well as a lot of body products. So one thing that is a wonderful resource is the environmental working group, whose Midwestern office happens to be in Ames. Has a large website with all kinds of consumer guides. And so if you just Google Environmental Working Group, now they're the NGO that brought us the Dirty Dozen. Every year they test for vegetables with the highest pesticide residues, and they publish that. And then they have also a deep database. They have Environmental Working Group's Skin Deep Guide to Cosmetics, so you can look up by brand, and it will give you a rating on whether it has, like, any levels of parabens or toxic things that you may not want to use on you or your children. They also have, and this is seasonally appropriate, they do have the Environmental Working Group's Guide to Sunscreen safety ratings that help you make the right purchases. So I would encourage people to use this resource. It's quite a big database, and it can really sort out some of the issues, you know, when you're looking at, and often people do read food labels, and I hope we're doing it more and more, but often people don't read body care product labels. And for good reason. They're quite complex. It's a bunch of long chemical names that, you know, we just are not equipped to understand. So that's Environmental Working Group. Just look up ewg.org. And it is a really, really good resource. source.
Yes, we have to think about not just what we put in our bodies, but what we put on our bodies.
Yes, your skin is your largest organ. You're
absorbing
so much through
and it absorbs a lot. Yeah, all kinds of, you know, that's where a lot of allergies.
Yes.
Actually, when people get allergies, especially if they're scratchy, itchy ones, they often then begin to start to figure out, well, what kind of soap do I use? What's in my laundry detergent? Those kinds of things do affect us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to mention that soap and poison ivy, getting things like poison ivy on you, the idea is to get that oil off of you, and soap is a good way to do that.
Yes, and actually, God, I wish I could remember the site, but the guy actually went through and he looked at all the different products that were marketed specifically for removing poison ivy.
Right.
And then just looked at a good old-fashioned, you know, natural homemade soap. Mm-hmm. And that homemade soap and a washcloth were just as effective mm-hmm. at removing mm-hmm. similar types of oils as all the fancy
scrub.
The trick
is to be timely and actually not scrub. Be really gentle. You don't want to scrub that stuff into your skin. Be gentle and don't use hot water.
Yeah. Cool water.
Get it off. Get it off. And well,
now, isn't it better to do that in the shower because?
Yes.
If you go in the bathtub, you could be spreading the oils around you, right?
Yeah, the only time I've ever heard poison ivy in a bath recommended is when you're doing the jewelweed soak to help mitigate.
Jewelweed soak?
Huh.
Yes.
Oh, tell us about is that to soothe you?
Well, jewelweed works both as a counteracted at the time of contact, but jewelweed also works after the fact. It's one of the few things that'll work after the fact to see those. Yeah, and I've used it both ways, and yeah, it's amazing.
Do you grow jewelweed?
Oh, you can find it in most ditches around here. Find a good wet ditch, and you'll probably find it around here.
Oh boy,
that's what. Yeah. Tell us more about herbs. You just love herbs, and you also use it for your dyeing and spinning and knitting. This woman can use all sorts of things. Tell me about herbs and yarns.
So herbs and yarns, yes. And so they're good. You know, just sort of looking around and using what I've got and what you have and, you know, farmer's market. And so, you know, everyone, I want to use natural dyes with that. But the biggest hurdle to using natural dyes is you have to use so much of it. Well, through farmer's market, people like Lana and some of the others. I know people that grow onions. And so I can get pounds and pounds of onion skins, enough to actually make dyeing with onion skins worthwhile.
This woman uses my onion skins. Otherwise, it would just go in the compost. And I couldn't believe it. She said, onions? Okay. It's yours.
A couple of the other people that make jam mm-hmm. With, you know, elderberries and blackberries, after you've squeezed everything you can out of it to make jam.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of color.
There's still the seeds and the pulp and all that. There's a lot of color left in it. Mm-hmm. I can still use that to extract and make some very lovely purplish grays in
wonderful.
The yarns and things.
Oh, I remember once I probably have some this year. I grow a tall red amaranth.
Oh.
And I thought, well, that's pretty. I do things because it's pretty. So I just grew it. Well, actually, you could eat it when it's young. But tall red, I brought it to farmer's market because it was pretty. I thought people would buy it for ornamentation, but this woman snarfed it up because she said this red stuff would do a fine dye.
Oh, I knew it was a dye because it was listed in all my books in this beautiful poster I have of Native American dye plants and things that were used, mm-hmm. but I wasn't quite sure what color it would make. And actually, it makes a beautiful, brilliant yellow.
You wouldn't think because the plant
itself is sort
red.
Of burgundy red.
Right. Magenta. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that could be that was the particular mordant that I was using with the...
All right. Tell us what a mordant is.
So the mordant, back to chemistry, so the science hat's coming on. So your fiber, whether it be plant or animal, you know, it's got these little cells and they've got little charges and things chemically. And so a mordant, more often than not, is a metal ion that's going to take and build a bridge between that dye molecule.
So where do you What do you do? Throw a nail in it? Where do you get in?
Sometimes, quite literally, yeah.
Oh, you're kidding.
The best way to get an iron mordant or zinc mordant is buy a handful of nails and let them seep in some vinegar to kind of help break them up and then put it back. But, yeah, alum, you know, this is aluminum sulfate. Iron sulfate, copper sulfate. A lot of people don't use copper because of some dangers associated with it. Mm-hmm. Being working with chemicals and stuff, you know, I'm aware of the dangers and take precautions. And so, yeah, tin, chrome, some of the other heavy metals. Beautiful mordants and colors, but, yeah, just be careful with them.
And the mordants, does that also help keep set the dye?
Yeah, it keeps it. Like I said, it's building a bridge between the dye molecule and your fiber and locking them together.
So I see you spinning occasionally at farmers markets.
Yes, so sometimes in the summer, that's the only time I have a place to do it.
we take our pleasure when we can. Yes. So very good, very good. Oh, how lovely. And soap and yarn seems to fit in, although you sound extremely busy, it seems to fit in with all your interests very well.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of, I think, life as a journey is one best enjoyed when you don't have a planned destination. And one thing leads to another. And so it's just kind of this crazy life that you kind of wander through. And, you know, the fiber arts started as just, oh, hey, let's take a knitting class. Yeah, grad school, something to kind of keep us from going crazy. And, oh, hey, this knitting's kind of fun. And, oh, yeah, I should learn to spin. Okay, now I'm spinning. Now I'm processing all these fleeces. Oh, well, white's boring. Let's do some dyeing. Let's do some crazy colors. Okay, you know, and then starting to look at natural plants and natural dyeing.
This is like women who geek, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's kind of like cooking. You always want to try something mm-hmm. brand
new. Yeah,
I
always try something new. And, yeah, people are like, oh, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, I've got the scientific knowledge as a base, and I don't know if that helps me understand, but I think I know where the limits are naturally, and so I know where to push them.
That's
or I know
well,
if something's not going right. Yeah,
understand.
It does help.
And also, obviously, you've folded in this historical background, which is very—it's helpful and it's fascinating.
Oh, to me, history is extremely fascinating, mm-hmm. and so that's the fun part: is pulling out this history and saying, okay. Well, they didn't know exactly what they were doing. They knew that they needed urine to help set the dyes, but they didn't know exactly what it was that was doing it. Well, you know, I can break that down chemically and recreate it in another way so that I can still get that same effect without having to collect smelly pots of urine.
Very good. And surviving the Black Plague was a handy little thing to find out,
trick,
too.
Yes.
I've heard of it. That was called thieves' vinegar.
Thieves' vinegar.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Handy stuff.
Well, given the high level of flea infestation that happened last year,
yes.
I'm going to get ready with my thieves' vinegar.
Yeah, well, it could be warmer and drier this year. It may not be quite so bad.
Oh, but ticks. There are ticks.
That's supposed to be some even new tickish diseases coming our way.
Yes, yes.
Compliments of global warming, I believe.
It reminds us that we live in a complicated world and we are all living on this planet together. Yes, we are. Jenny, how can people find you? And you have a website.
Yes, we do. Our website is Herbal Bliss Soaps. Bliss and Soaps is shortened down. Instead of three S's, there's only two.
Bliss Soaps. Bliss Soaps.
Bliss Soaps. We are at the Ames Farmers Market every Saturday from May through October. We also sell through the Iowa Foods Co-op and then through Alluvial Brewing and Little Woods Herbal.
Two new
clients that we're custom
making. Right, so the Alluvial Brewing has beer soap, right?
Yes.
And Little Herb has tea soap?
Little Wood Herbal. She makes her own specialty blends of teas, and we have made, I think, four custom soaps using their teas.
And they will be at her shop on Main Street.
And they are at her shop on Main Street.
Oh, how wonderful. That's good. We'll talk to you a little bit more later. It's a joy to talk to someone who really loves what they do. Recently, I met a past guest of the Donalana Kitchen in the bulk food section of the food co-op. Here comes this man, and I recognize him. Yes, he was on the show. His name was Sean Brown. He was on a show in the spring of 2015, way back when. And he did a show about planting an orchard. He owns Seebeck Orchard in Radcliffe, Iowa, just starting out at the time. And I asked him how things were going. And being spring, he just pulls out his phone, and just like he was showing me his grandkids, we flipped through the whole orchard and looked at it, all the trees that are coming up, and the blossoms were gorgeous. And also, he's very much into permaculture, using the land well, intercropping. Underneath his fruit trees, he's got strawberries planted. So it's always good to do more than one thing. So it's nice to meet a man who enjoys his work. That was Sean Braun. If you want to find that interview, you can go to khoifm.org, find the Donna Lana Talk section there, and go to the...
Oh, we got 3 years of archives.
Go to
on
the 2015 archives, and it's a March program called Plant an Orchard. Yeah, that's happening now. You're listening to KHOI 89.1. You're back. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. And now we have a few items from the Donna Lana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick, 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 tick-a-tick. That's the ticker tape. Tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick. First, we have, we have bad news and we have good news. Bad news. Let's do that first. Our dear President, Mr. Trump, is going to nominate, actually an Iowa person here, a Sam Clovis, a former corporate executive and conservative radio talk show host and current climate change denier, who's not a scientist and has no food background, for the role of lead scientist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So there you have it.
And the previous person holding that post was from ISU. What was her name? Catherine or Kathleen Wotecki? So she's no longer there, and she's being replaced by a non-scientist. This is more of the anti-science bias that we're seeing and seeing and seeing.
I have a little statement here from Ricardo Salvador, who actually has an ISU connection, but he is working with the Union of Concerned Scientists here. And among other things he has to say about this possible appointment here, more leadership and investment in science, not less, is needed to solve long-term challenges faced by farmers. And
right. Ricardo he's an agronomist at the Union of Concerned Scientists. He knows whereof he speaks.
Right. So we'll keep our eyes and ears on these developments. So if you hear that the world is flat now, I guess you got to know where that comes from. Okay, that's our sort of bad news from the news department. Good news from the Donna Lana Kitchen News Department. The U.S. Bank, big money bank, U.S. Bank has announced that it will no longer finance fossil fuel pipeline construction.
Woohoo!
We're talking...
That's a big deal. That's a rather major bank.
Right. We're talking divestment, folks. Remember when some of us were active and things did work. We divested when people made a lot of noise about what was going on in South Africa quite a few years ago. Mm-hmm. When the money goes away.
It's interesting. Obviously, the divestment strategy is gaining momentum when a large bank like this joins it. It's comes probably not from the goodness of their heart, but from consumer pressure.
And shareholders and people getting on their case, and people say, we don't want you to do that. That's our money. And, yeah, there we have it.
So, hooray for the U.S. Bank.
Yeah, we need a transformation away from the global energy system we have because, well, according to scientists and some other people that kind of think these things through, it may not be all that good for us to keep burning up our fossil fuels. Let's get our little brains together and figure out different ways to do
that. I think we're doing very well with wind in Iowa. Obvious. You drive around and the amount of windmills that we have it's pretty spectacular, actually.
More and more keep going up every year. It's very impressive.
Wow. So, also, this thing about divesting, there's this thing called the DAPL pipeline going through Iowa. Huh?
Dakota Access.
Huh? Well, there was a very small little accident this past week. 84 gallons of the stuff that goes to the pipeline, the crude, it spilled. Well,
Iowa.
No. It was over in
North Dakota.
We're kind of where it started, and the powers that be said, "Oh no, we have it under control. That's fine." But remember, when people were protesting the pipeline, which is all dug into the ground across Iowa now, they said it's not a matter of if it spills, but when it spills. So here's the first one, and All right. 84 gallons. Doesn't seem like much, but I don't want the responsibility.
Two bathtubs full.
Yeah, I don't want the responsibility for cleaning up 84 gallons of crude. Well, but there it is. But it sounds like things are changing.
Okay, what did they use to clean it up? Soap?
How does one clean up oil?
I'm really digging into the memory bank here, but I think that, there's a combination of detergents and surfactants that they can use to absorb it. Some of it is natural products, like a lot of rice straw anymore is used in cleaning up that. That's why it's very expensive producers to buy straw anymore. It's because so much of it's picked up for environmental remediations.
Oh, really?
Why, because the rice straw just absorbs the oil and then they pick it up and
carry it off and then it. Yeah, it has to go
somewhere
else.
Where do they put it? Yeah.
I know one of my first jobs was working at what was then the soil tilth laboratories, and we were culturing a bunch of bacteria that could eat and degrade different environments, different chemicals and things. And
has that progressed?
Yes, it's always been sort of project that's slowly, continually gone on, and I think that there's a lot of interesting. It's a great idea. I think where people get a lot of pause is, okay, you're going to take this bacteria and put it into, a strange environment because it needs to eat this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens when it's done eating that one thing? Then what
is
going to happen?
Get it back out
exactly.
of the environment.
And so because of that, I think a lot of those projects sort of get stalled, because...
Ooh.
There's no stop mechanism for these.
Yes, how do we clean up our environment? How do we clean up ourselves? We're kind of all in this together. Yeah. Ooh, ouch, yes. Well, let's see. Oh, here's the thing I want to mention. I discovered a cheesecake. And I wanted to mention these flavors because this is my favorite taste just for right now. Lavender blueberry cheesecake. Mm. And it's pretty. It's purple.
Oh,
and it was available at one of our fine local restaurants, the one that's kind of straight north of the ISU campus, kind of one block from a bank building that has this clock tower on it. We all know where it is. It's at that cafe place up there. They have lavender blueberry cheesecake.
Yum. Mm. And there's going to be a new, it's not called the cafe, but there will be a new restaurant in the next I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks, and we will be covering that on the Donnell on a Kitchen. Awesome. Stay tuned for new restaurant recommendations.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, also, let's see. Here's another thing coming up. I noticed that there's always a lot of good stuff at the Ames Public Library, and this Thursday, there's going to be a lecture called Africa from A to Z by Jim and Cindy Pease in the auditorium, Thursday at 7 o'clock, May 18th. I mention that because, well, he takes a lot of good pictures, and you'll see a lot of nice things. But Jim Pease, you may know him. He's the retired Extension Wildlife guy from ISU.
Oh, that's what
and he tells a good yarn.
Yes.
I do like to hear him talk.
Do you know?
7 o'clock in the evening, Thursday.
This coming Thursday.
Really soon. Anyway, that's good. That's
okay.
Good. Yeah. So we've been talking today on the Donnell on a Kitchen around our kitchen table about soap and cleaning things and how herbs and natural products can be used. And we've had a wonderful guest. Thank you for being with us today, Jenny Welder.
Thank you so much for having me today. This has been so much fun.
I'm glad you had so much wonderful information to share with us.
I'm coming for my, what was that?
Thieves vinegar. Yes.
I'm going to be ready for the flea season.
And the Black Plague.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Whoa, we are
By
ready
all means.
Here.
How does it do with Ebola?
I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
Wrong continent, but we have
I'm
a new eruption on the planet again. So
there must be something. I mean, like you said, in chemistry, there's action reaction. There's likes work on likes, you just keep looking around because even when you're walking through the woods, there's okay that takes away the sting. This causes a sting. There's a lot of things like that, and I think we just need to know.
What was the herb for getting rid of the poison ivy?
Jewelweed.
Jewelweed. Okay.
Yep. It's got a little bright yellow flower and sort of a triangle-shaped leaf, and it's called jewelweed because the dewdrops hang on the edge of the leaf and look like little jewels.
So what would you do? You would pick it, steep it, and put it in the bath water, or
yes.
use it as a wash?
Yep. That's what I do, and that's the recommendation from Gibbons.
Yes.
1970s.
Yes.
Stalking the Wild
Gibbons.
Asparagus.
Yes.
His book, and it works like a charm.
Oh. Okay, so now we're prepared for fleas and ticks and poison ivy.
Poison ivy.
And sunscreen. So we are ready for summer. Bring it on.
Yes, we are. Very good. So we've talked to Jenny today. That's good. And find her at the Ames Farmers Market. And look for
us. Yes, and next week will be the lard baking contest.
Oh, forward to that one.
Oh, yeah.
Always good. Next week on the Donnell on a Kitchen, we'll have another report from our man in the field, Nick Odie. He's a member of Practical Farmers of Iowa, and he's talking to farmers all summer and recording them. And we'll have a little farm talk with Nick Odie. He's going to be talking to T.D. Holub from Garden Oasis Farms in Coggin, Iowa. So tune in for
some more good Iowa farmers.
Yeah. Listen to the Donnell on a Kitchen every Tuesday at noon and repeat it at 7 o'clock in the evening, or go to khoifm.org. That's the website. Find a lot of stuff on there. There's a lot of good programs on this radio station, 24/7. Yes, it is. You can listen on your computer. You can all that kind of stuff on all your devices. Yes, yes. We talked about soap today. We've had music by a wonderful concertina player called Niall Vallely from his CD, Beyond Words. And we're going to go out with this little bit of music I picked for you, Donna, because it's called Dogs in the Bushes. Speaking of the woman who's got these dogs that just love to run and get all dirty. Oh, they're just, speaking of dogs and dirt.
I got dogs
dirt.
In the bushes, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, yes, yes. So contact us if you'd like. What's on your plate? Go to khoiradio@gmail.org. And you can leave us a message. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food. Enjoy life.